Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio. William Sanderson is the ultimate that guy actor. He has spent almost half a century performing in TV, film, and on stage. You may know him from his role as E.B. Farnham on the HBO Western Deadwood. Or perhaps you remember him from Blade Runner or the sitcom Newhart. William chronicles his career in a memoir called Yes, I'm That Guy, The Rough and Tumble Life of a Character Actor. Sanderson was on his way to becoming a lawyer when he got bit by the acting bug.
I was rehearsing Marat Saad, and I played an insane patient and surprise. And after I rehearsed, they applauded the cast, the rehearsal. Boy, it was just a great feeling.
Yeah.
And I said, it gave me a lot of confidence. And over the years, became more of an obsession. But when I started out, it was just one of the many things I did to try to get over shyness, self-consciousness, et cetera.
Yeah. In the fall of 1978, you moved to Hollywood. And then about a year later, you got cast in Universal's new biopic about country music superstar Loretta Lynn, coal miner's daughter. Who did you play?
I played her uncle, and he was described as a chicken thief and moonshiner, and his name was Lee Dollarhide. And Loretta herself was on the set visiting and said, don't use his name, he's trying to sue me. And of course, we used his name.
Yeah, and didn't you originally, correct me if I'm wrong, William, but didn't you originally read for the part of her husband, Dooley, that Tommy Lee Jones got, or not?
Well, the agent submitted me.
Mm-hmm.
But it was all fun. I tell a story, I'll just abbreviate it, about Tommy Lee. Loretta's real husband wasn't that thrilled with the casting of Tommy Lee Jones.
Ooh.
With whom I survived six projects later.
Yeah. Why wasn't Dooley, Loretta's real husband, thrilled with
that? I don't know. And okay. It was Tommy that told me. I saw that he had a bandage on his head one day when we're shooting.
Mm.
And he had to take it off for the shot. But in the rehearsal, well, he told me later he got a little too drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And the night before, and a cop hit him in the head.
Mm-hmm.
After that happened, Loretta's husband, Doolittle Lynn, kind of liked him,
mm-hmm.
thought he was more right for the part.
Right, yeah. I could see that, yeah. In 1981, you auditioned for this neo-noir science fiction film based on a Philip K. Dick novel called Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? This movie, of course, is Blade Runner, and it was directed by Ridley Scott. Who did you play in Blade Runner?
Oh, I'd like to just say out loud, it's great to be in a cult film. I play J.F. Sebastian, who's called a genetic engineer.
You live in this building all by yourself?
Yeah, I live here pretty much alone right now.
Must get lonely here, J.F.
Hmm. Not really. I make friends. They're toys. My friends are toys. I make them. It's a hobby. I'm a genetic designer. Do you know what that is?
No.
They built a fabulous set for my apartment, say,
mm-hmm.
Sebastian's apartment.
Yeah.
Didn't all get in the film, but makes you feel pretty good when Ridley Scott said, would you like to see it? And I walked in there, and it was mannequins and pool tables and mistakes that he had made.
Is there a particular memory that stands out in your mind from when you were working on Blade Runner?
Well, I love the direction. I guess Ridley conned me, if intellectuals are listening. My character was far from innocent, but Ridley Scott whispered in my ear, this is a totally innocent man.
Hmm.
And that's something fun to play, whether it's true or not. And I quit worrying about the lighting, about Rutger Hauer improvising, and just tried to make him innocent.
Yeah, it said you say or you write in your book that liberated you. That Ridley whispering, "This is a totally innocent man," into your ear, liberated you and made it more fun and really helped you.
Yeah, I can only imagine if he'd said it to Tommy Lee Jones, what he'd say. But Ridley was a tough taskmaster, but
yeah,
he's kind of a visionary. So
yeah, after Blade Runner, you worked with Tommy Lee Jones again on a made-for-TV biopic, The Executioner's Song, about the serial killer Gary Gilmore. And then your next acting gig was on Bob Newhart's sitcom Newhart. Can you tell me about your audition for Larry, the Appalachian woodsman, with the two silent brothers named Daryl?
Yeah, I don't know if I can do it without belaboring it, but I went in dressed kind of like I saw him as a tramp.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow they matched me up with Tony Pappenfuss and John Volstead, my brother Daryl, my other brother Daryl. But the live audience that Bob Newhart insists upon helped us because they applauded or laughed.
Yeah.
So they gradually brought us in more and more.
Hi, I'm Larry. This is my brother Daryl. That's my other brother Daryl.
So how you doing?
Okay, except I throwed my back out last week crawling under a house.
Sounds like a tough job.
Wasn't a job. I just like crawling under houses.
Do you have a favorite Larry line?
Oh, goodness. Women. You can't live with them. You can't stuff them in a sack.
Yeah. That's a great line, yeah. I've got to ask you about the last episode of Newhart. I think it's the most brilliant TV series finale of all time. What did you think of it?
Well, 30 million people watched it. It came in number one. So I was happy the brothers could talk.
Yes. Yeah, they got to speak for the one and only time they got to yell quiet to their chatty wives.
Can I tell you one Daryl story? They took a lot, and they lost jobs, put the career on hold because Newhart didn't really want them to make commercials and so forth. But Tony said to me, who played my brother Daryl, he said, maybe when they want us to talk, I'll say, look, this is working so well, I just think I won't talk. But he's really just showing me his mindset. But I love that the anarchy was there.
And if there's anything like this ever, you know, comes up again, you'll certainly be the first ones we'll call. I wish there was some way of making this up to you.
Well, Dick, there was that dead possum out by the well.
We'll take it.
Yeah, there was talk of a Larry, Daryl, and Daryl spinoff series, but Bob wouldn't allow it while Newhart was on the air. As you write in your book, do you think a Larry, Daryl, and Daryl spinoff series would have been successful?
Well, somebody did because they gave us a nice amount of money for the option, but then the company, MTM, went broke. But I think it's God knows better. It was hard enough. It was a stigma to being on it. Ridley Scott's casting director, for instance, would say, they pay me to find people who haven't been on television series.
There you go, yeah. You had the chance to work with John Candy on the comedy film Wagons East in 1994. What was that experience like?
Oh, great guy, lovable guy. First one to congratulate Sharon and I on getting married. And,
oh, that's great.
He liked to party.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, this is the third movie in a row he had done. We were up in the mountains in Durango, Mexico. And whatever he partied with, drinking, that's all I ever saw. But it took its toll, you know, and he was overweight. And oddly, he was supposed to be his back operated on after the movie by my good friend, Dr. Robert Watkins, that I write about in the book. But he passed away a day or two before we finished the film.
Yeah.
But he was a heck of a nice person.
Yeah.
So funny.
The bald contempt of it. Why not come out five abreast, cavorting and taunting? E.B. was left out. E.B. was left out. Make your filthy gestures. Public service was never my primary career.
In 2004, you were cast in the HBO Western series Deadwood. You portrayed E.B. Farnham, a character based on a real person. Can you tell me a bit about E.B. Farnham?
Well, the real E.B. Farnham was the first mayor. And he may have been a postmaster. He may dispense justice in the thoroughfare. He opened a business. And so I was excited when I got it. But David Milch, the great creator of the show, gradually wove my, neurotic personality in there. And so I became a buffoon. But it was always fun to play. And that's not a problem for me to play.
Yeah.
But he also gave me some great dialogue that they call pseudo-Shakespearean.
What was it like for you to work with that kind of dialogue?
Oh, it was a joy. Now, if I have to recall, and sometimes they were difficult, and it was all I could do to memorize it. They'd give them to you at the last minute. But in my book, we have, if I may say, a lot of the exact dialogue, and they were just a joy.
Yeah.
But he also could be very crude and have Farnham call this Calamity Jane half-woman, and he'd have me insult the great actor Smiley Parker with words, and if he didn't say cut, I'd keep saying swine and this and that, you know. But Farnham was full of hatred. Mm.
Yeah, in your book, you describe David Milch as one of the most fascinating human beings you've ever known. He's brilliant, prolific, generous, and self-destructive all at the same time. And you say that you see a lot of yourself in David, and you believe that it's mutual. Can you explain that? What do you mean by that?
When I reread that, it looks conceited, but...
No, it didn't to me. I didn't read it that way.
Thank you. David's strong, gentle, crazy. He described himself as a degenerate gambler who gambled away $100 million. I wouldn't say that, but it's all in the newspapers, you know. But he had a gift, you know. What is it? May I define talent in a crude way? Talent is doing what other people want to do. Genius is doing what talent wants to do.
Is there one scene from Deadwood, the series, that you're especially proud of?
There was one where I was scrubbing blood off the floor.
Yes. And yeah.
He's kind of angry at Ian McShane's character.
I'll throw Farnham a token fee. Why should I reward E.B. with some small fractional participation in the claim? Or let him even lay by a little security and source of continuing income for his declining years? What's he ever done for me? Not to mention ordering a man killed in one of E.B.'s rooms. So every free moment of his life, E.B. has to spend scrubbing the bloodstains off the goddamn floor.
Yeah, that was a great scene. That's like one of your best acting scenes ever, I think, which is saying something. And you write in your book that you actually started to ad lib a bit, right? Because the director didn't say cut. So you...
Well, thank you for remembering. It's therapeutic to get to say it out loud. I've known that director 40 years or something, but he thought he hadn't said cut. So you keep acting until they say cut.
Yeah.
Unless you're a star, you stop whenever you want to.
Yeah.
So I ad-libbed, and when we got through with the scene, I felt it went pretty good, but not as well as I could do. But I heard him rushing to the next scene and saying, I got me a tantrum. I'm going to use it. It was David wrote the words, and I just continued.
Yeah, very true. What did you think of Deadwood, the movie?
That's a tough question. It got great reviews. I've never been completely satisfied with anything I did. But I thought Dan Minahan did a good job, the director. It was fun to do. It was fun to see my friends and people you thought were your enemies embracing you, people weeping that they got to come back. You know, you can only have one great experience in life.
Yeah.
The secret's to repeat it as many times as you can.
Yeah.
I loved the last movie of the week, especially because I didn't get killed.
Yeah. is there one dream role that you've always wanted to play?
I guess maybe a normal person. I'd like to play a normal person.
Yeah. Who's the closest? Of the people you've played, can you say one is the closest to being normal?
Stanley's Gig, based on a real-life character with Faye Dunaway. But it was just an independent film, but it was based on a true story about a guy who played the ukulele, and he wanted to have a job on a cruise ship entertaining, but he was a drunk, and he never made it. But he took a job in an old folks' home where he finds his salvation. He befriends Marla Gibbs, who is an old jazz singer. And when they screened it for the real guy in New York, he said, well, I can die now. And I think he meant it as a compliment.
William Sanderson, thank you very much.
Thank you again.
Actor William Sanderson is the author of Yes, I'm That Guy, The Rough and Tumble Life of a Character Actor. Find out more about William at WPR.org/beta.
It's a very, very peculiar film that could only have been made in this era, I think. This huge budget road trip musical with a car chase and heroes who have sunglasses on and you're not really sure what they're about. They're criminals, but they're eating fried chicken. It's got so much peculiar stuff going on in it.
Film journalist Nick DeSemlian joins us to talk about the wild and crazy Mavericks who ignited the 1980s comedy movie renaissance. That's coming up on Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio.